Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
From the Liquor Barn Studios, it's time for the V Show, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now, here's Bobby V.
Hey, and welcome to the Thursday before Thurby, before Derby for the 150th time. So, there you go. There's a lot of conditions there. Is that a cross on your hat? Is that a Christian hat? What is that?
It randomly got left at one of my houses after a party that we
had.
One
of my houses? What are you, a real estate tycoon?
Oh, yeah. No. Just moved out of it like last summer. Okay. So, but someone left a hat and it says it's a rapper's brand is Cactus Jack.
But it looks like a cross.
I think it does have a cross on it, but but if you look closely, because his thing is Cactus Jack, but if you look closely, it says Cactus Jock, and I always think of it as like kind of funny because it's not exactly the brand name,
right?
It's kind of like a knockoff that like if someone like actually was paying attention, they'd be like, "That says Jock," and I'm like, "All right, good. And you were paying attention," and then they can't like make fun of me for like having
that's good
a misspelled thing.
That's fair enough.
Yeah,
it is. You don't know where that hat's been though. You know what? You know.
Oh, I know who used to own it.
Oh, you
so,
do?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
they
because I wore
they won't have head lice. You feel confident?
Yeah, no,
about
they
that.
Don't. I wore it recently in front of them, and they're like, "I think that's my hat," and I was like, "I think it is too." But
wow, and then you didn't give it back.
They're like, "It's been gone, so you're fine with it." And I was like, "Sure."
I don't know if there's a statute of limitations on hats or not. That would be an interesting topic. What's the best piece of clothing that you have in your closet that you found that wasn't yours, that somebody left and you couldn't figure out how to give it back to them? And so you really had no choice. It was either give it to Goodwill or throw it out or use it. And I don't know. I wonder if that's a thing. Do people have those things? I'm trying to think. Most of the time, I think it's something like sunglasses or something like that. People always forget their sunglasses. But I don't know if it's a real article of clothing. And certain things, I don't know if I'd wear. I don't know if I'd wear shoes. Like, that whole thing about bowling shoes is very creepy to me.
I couldn't wear someone else's shoes.
Well, but yet we go to the bowling alleys. We do that all the time. That's pretty disgusting. I mean, get yourself a pair of shoes. You know what I'm saying? It's like renting a Kleenex. I mean, it's really unbelievable. Let's see. Oh, we have questions on... Well, I don't know. They're asking about portals, which is how we open the show, basically, each day now, because that's where we are, man. That's where we are. It's not, no disrespect for the people who always love to talk about, recruiting, but the fact is, recruiting was a long, drawn-out, this is like every 5 minutes. In fact, to this extent, which is fun. I mean, to me, it's fun. I don't know. And I like stuff that's fun. Rick Bozich put a thing out recently about how Bart Torvik has listen, nobody knows. But he's using advanced metrics, so that's what he does. And so at least he's got an educated guess. We're all taking guesses. His is more educated than others. But he will update the projected, like, rankings for next season almost literally by the half hour, because whenever a guy has declared for the portal or has been picked to school or definitely has left the school or whatever, and this is what he does. He's got the big computer database and he projects everything and he plugs that guy in or takes that guy out of whatever school he's leaving, and boom, and the thing changes that quickly. So, yeah, we're talking about it every day. You're damn right. So, there you go. Let's see what we've got here. Would somebody ask me about... Oh, man. Forgive me. An Abu Bakar Traore.
Yeah, I have no clue.
Long Beach State.
That's all I know. And then I think he's gotten like 10 to 12 points per game.
But is he coming to Louisville?
I think he was on a visit this past weekend.
Okay.
I really have... That was the one name I did not even know.
Well, this one says
about.
He has. Cardinal, one of the websites, says he's committed to coach Pat Kelsey and Louisville basketball. He averaged 12 points, 8.5 rebounds, 4.5 assists, averaged over a block a game, shot 51% from the field at Long Beach State. And so they got another one. So there we go. We open the show. Yes, evidently Traore has committed to the – did that happen during your real show or not? No, not. Young man from Long Beach State.
Oh, he did?
Well, evidently, that's...
Oh, nice. I didn't see that. Maybe that's who...
it's on the internet. You know you can believe
maybe
it.
Maybe that's who Phil was talking about. I thought he was talking about they got a linebacker football.
I don't think this kid will play linebacker since he's a basketball player.
Miles Jurner, yeah, they got on the football side. Oh, I thought he was talking about that.
That's why we do it every day, because every damn day, it's you're getting updates. And I like this type of squad he's putting together. There's another guy who does everything. He rebounds, 8.5 rebounds, 12 points, 4.5 assists. He's a willing passer. He shoots 51% from the field. By the way, I went back and looked at my notes. I'd forgotten. I remember I said yesterday when we talked about the most recent commit before this one for Louisville, and we were talking about the fact that a lot of the guys that they've gotten now I hadn't had a chance to do their games during the year just because they weren't on our schedule. But
right.
But this guy we did. I'd forgotten that I did a Washington game. And so Corin Johnson, I did Washington at Arizona. And why is that important? Because I always believe you gauge a guy by the highest level of competition he plays. That's not for me. UB says that. UB Brown said that. You know, don't go by a guy who's put up these gaudy numbers against the worst teams on your schedule. That doesn't really tell you much. What has he done against the most challenging teams on your schedule? Well, Arizona was about as good a team as you're going to get in the Pac-12, and Washington gave him a game. They lost in Arizona, like everybody else did. But Johnson had a big game. I'd forgotten. He had 4 threes in that game.
Oh, wow.
17 points. Played really well. Yeah, he was a big offensive factor in that game. So, and I'll tell you what else. When you have a reputation for identifying players, and keep in mind that is very much what Seth Greenberg talked about. The skill set for recruiting is being able to identify players, not only talented players. I mean, that's not that hard, but talented players that, A, in your mind, the way you're putting your team together in your head, they can mesh and they can play your style. And based on, again, the kinds of guys that he's getting, I think he's done a really good job of that. And I asked my friend, my roommate in college, Gary Edwards, was the coach at Charleston Southern, still lives in Charleston. And so I asked him about Pat Kelsey. I said, what do you know about him? He said, well, he seems like a really good guy. I don't really know him, but he's done a great job down here. The town loves him. They sell out every game, and he's done it with guys not heavily recruited. What does that tell me? Not that he's trying to prove anything. Like, let me show you. I'm going to beat you with guys. But that, you know, we're not 4 stars or 5 stars or anything like that. It's about a guy who clearly knows who he wants. And so if he finds a guy that has the skill set that – you know, fits what he wants done, he's going to commit to that guy. And he didn't really care whether you give him 2 stars, 8 stars, 5 stars, because and that, to me, has always been the sign of a guy who builds a successful program, not just a successful one-year team necessarily. So, and that's what he did there. He built a perpetual winner down there, as he did at Winthrop before that. And so feeling good about the guys they're bringing in. That's another good player, evidently. So,
and they're also hosting Chucky Hepburn of Wisconsin today.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like him. I had them, too.
You saw that Kelsey picked him up from the airport, and we all had fun with that on Twitter. We were like, wow, oh, my God, this is really catching steam.
Who was the one who tweeted that? Was it
Matt Jones.
What in the world? Matt, it's not his first—I mean, honestly, it's not his first day at the rodeo. Why did that dazzle him so much? I mean, he's been around the game for 20-some-odd years.
The best part—
Every coach in America picks up the players at the airport.
The best part was everyone responded with, like, the same one from, like, 2014 of Calipari picking up someone.
Aside from that, that's like, I mean, I get that. But my point is, you didn't need to find that one isolated picture to say, okay, well, it's happened before. Everybody does this. I mean, I just, how in the world would you not have been aware of that? I'm somewhat surprised because he's, you know, he's been around the game and been around the coaches, and that amazed me. I mean, I know I get it. We're all excited about our new coaches, and we want to celebrate anything that they do that's celebratable, make my own word up. But that was an odd one, I got to admit, because, I mean, everybody does that. All the coaches do that. So that's just, it was very funny. It seems to me that, again, consistent with that, about a guy who knows what he wants to do and knows what I think.
Hey, Tanner, un-X the phones, if you don't mind. I think Greg might be calling.
I thought he was coming in.
I don't think he is. I think he's calling.
No, I don't want him on anymore.
Oh, come on. Don't be that way.
I wanted to see him. Darn it. I'm sorry. I've got to regroup. There he is. See? There he is right there. That's him. So we'll get back to the recruiting thing. But like I said, when you've got guys, and again, we're not doing the dump on Kenny Payne story anymore. You don't need to do that. That's the chapter that's closed. But it's important in terms of speaking of why you perceive things to be so different. You've got guys, and Kentucky does too, of course, who are accomplished head coaches. I mean, that you're not doing it on theory. Well, this is what I think he's going to try and do. You know, and so you look at what they're doing, and certainly Kelsey, who's had a head start here on Mark Pope, he's doing just what he appears to have done at the other two places he's been. He knows the type of player he wants. He's very aggressively going to get those guys, and he's putting a roster together that is going to complement each other very well. I think again, you know, these are guys that their skill set meshes nicely. Really, really, really like what we're seeing so far from that. All right, let's get Mr. Greg Gagliette on. Hello, Mr. Greg Gagliette, president of the Louisville Bats. How are you, my friend?
Robert, how are you, sir?
I'm well. I want you to know I'm doing this right up front so I don't forget. My other son, Jameson.
Favorite son. Just go ahead and say it. Your favorite son.
Said, make sure you tell Mr. Gagliette that we are looking forward. He and his wife, his lovely wife Shelby, are bringing their two Goldens out for bark at the
park. Bark at the park.
Yeah. So, isn't there another term for it, though? I thought there was another name for it. Bark at the park.
We call it dog night, but
pause on the pitch. Bark at the park.
We're combining it tonight with our $2 beer happy hour, so that should be very well received.
Well, that's going to be owners. That's going to be a problem because I'll be honest with you. One of his dogs, I think, has a drinking problem. No, I'm making that up. Completely making that up. He's got two of the friendliest.
There are rehab centers for that.
So that's tonight, right? It's tonight for the dogs at the.
And how about this, Bob? We're going to add to that from 5:30 to 8:30. Besides the $2 12-ounce can Miller Lite and Coors Light, we're going to throw in their $3 chicken tenders.
Oh my God!
And $3 regular nachos. So,
wow.
Yeah,
that,
and great
you
weather.
You can't beat that.
Team's playing well, so.
Yeah, it's fun. I was out there. You know, I wasn't able to make the opening day, so I used my 5-game package that I bought with my buddy back package.
We appreciate that.
I used my tickets for that game for a game last weekend. Oh my God, loved it. I mean, the weather was absolutely. You won't have a nicer day all year. So I was blessed in that regard. I just got lucky with the incredible. But the game was entertaining. The Bats win, and it was just. And I love my seats. I'm right behind the first baseman. So when the throws come across the infield, it's always interesting to me to watch. This is just something we've never talked about. We're not going to spend any time on it. But until you sit behind the first baseman, you don't realize how much the infielders throws to first move. I mean, they don't throw a straight line. They throw the ball tails or curves. I mean, the poor first baseman, he's got work to do there. It's
There's a lot of pitchers that are jealous of the amount of movement that goes on those balls that come across the diamond. They wish they could get their pitches to do that.
That's the truth. Very, very cool indeed. And again, so in love with all of the innovations. The game goes so properly fast. The challenge rule, Greg, that's it. No more calls. We have a winner. The tap your helmet thing, you get three cracks at it. That's the way to do it. Takes 10 seconds. I'm loving that. I think that's my favorite.
Yeah, we're just waiting to see when Major League Baseball's player union might go ahead and say, okay, we're ready to take that on here at the Major League level, because currently it's still just here at the minor league level.
Well, they need to incorporate it, because I'm watching the game, and I always try and watch what I call the game in the cracks. And so I'm looking for little subtle body language stuff and things. Based on what I'm seeing, I don't think the players have a problem with it. I think they're cool. They tap their helmet, take a look, and then the thing says what it says, and everybody goes about their business. The guy gets back in the box. Yep. I mean, you were playing Columbus, and they were the worst challenging team ever. They challenged three times, were wrong all three times. So they lost all their challenges. You guys were 3-for-3, and
you get to keep them.
Yeah, and you just play. I mean, the guy, he was wrong. He tapped his helmet. The umpire listened to the thing in his ear, said, nope, challenge, you lost your challenge. He gets back in the box, and they play. It was no more whining and moaning and pissing and moaning and bitching.
Well, you ought to be here on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, or Thursdays when it's straight ABS, which means straight computer. You want to talk about playing baseball in a library. It's so quiet because there's no moaning by the players or managers because every pitch is being called by a computer. So there's nothing to argue.
I'm not sure. When I talked to you last time, I think you said you like the challenge rule better, right? You don't like the
I do, because it brings in the human factor like you got to see, where it's almost a little strategy there. Do I challenge it right now?
I agree.
Risk losing my challenges?
Yeah, and it was significant. You had a guy up. The bats had a guy up, and it was a 2-2 pitch, and they called it a strike, and he challenged it, and it was up onto being a ball, and so the count went to 3-2, and then they walked him, and then you wound up getting like a 2-run rally out of it. And I thought, that's the beauty of baseball. One pitch often decides the momentum of an inning. So very cool. So that's,
and we're currently playing the Nashville Sounds, managed by old bats manager Rick Sweet. So Rick's in town right now.
Gosh, I love seeing him. I'd have to get out there maybe and try and see.
He hates losing to the bats. I can tell you that. I've already talked to him. He goes, man, I can't seem to get a win here in Louisville. You guys don't treat me very well.
Well, he's only got about 5,000 minor league wins, so he's not hurting for
it. I know.
So he's had quite a run. So tonight is the dog and the beer and the chicken tenders and the great discount. Yeah, yeah. What else we got looking at for the weekend here? You got other things coming
up,
right?
Well, tomorrow night, every Friday night, we do Margarita Madness, where it's $6 margaritas made with, number one, tequila. So you're not going to find a better tequila than that. Now, how about this for Saturday night for a lineup? Saturday night, game time 7:15, doors open at 6. When we open the doors at 6 o'clock, the first 2,000 fans are going to receive lighted space swords. And you're saying, lighted space swords, why is that? That's because this Saturday night is Star Wars night. So the Bats players will take the field playing in their Darth Maul jerseys. We'll have 30 to 35 basically movie-quality costume characters roaming the stands in the ballpark on Saturday night for fans to have their photographs taken with. And we'll have Star Wars music playing throughout the night. We'll have a costume contest for both adults and kids, so be sure to dress up. And then after the game's over, we've got a big fireworks show, thanks to our friends over at Forvis. And we do this each and every Saturday. Now, Bob, we have $4 craft canned beer from some of our favorite craft breweries here in town, like Against the Grain, Atrium, High Wire, and our friends over at West 6. And we also have a $4 6-ounce wine pour that's available from our friends at Cupcake Vineyard. So we got a little bit of everything for everyone on Saturday. And again, Saturday game time is at 7:15 for Star Wars night. And then we close out the homestand Sunday afternoon, 1:05. Doors open at noon. And each and every Sunday, of course, is Kids Day here. So the free kids meal, kids inflatables for kids to play on in our West Annex and the Hall of Fame Pavilion. And then, of course, after the game, kids can take a lap around the bases. So it's going to be a great weekend. Looks like the weather's going to be really nice. So great opportunity to come down and enjoy some that's baseball.
Yeah, it's...
How do I get one of those light-up stores?
No, you got to go. You're going to have to ask out of the restaurant. Nick's going to have to get off.
I'm off Saturday.
Well, then you go to the game, and they'll get there early.
I just need to make sure, like,
you're the first 2,000. Get there. Go there
is
now.
Is that just for kids or, like, adults, too?
No, sir.
Yes. Yes.
Fans,
let's go.
Yeah. Well, now you got.
How about that, Nick?
So the Valvano family will be well represented there. Jamie will have the dogs there tonight. Nick will be there for the. And I guarantee you'll take pictures.
And Nick, if you get problems at the restaurant, take your space sword and tap your customers on the hands and say sorry. You can't do that.
Yeah.
Oh, I like that.
You know what? That might not be. That'll be a questionable Yelp review, but yeah, it's.
Yeah, that is a good point. Well, that'll be great. So, and then obviously everybody gets the hell out of town for Derby, right? You're not here for Derby.
Yeah, we're basically Major League Baseball knows better now to even try to schedule us here during Derby week, because good luck trying to find a hotel to take a visiting team. So,
yep,
we'll be gone, and we come back the following week. And the big event, the following homestand after Derby, is going to be on that Saturday night when it's Halloween night. And it's halfway to Halloween, and we're going to have a lot of fun that night and let kids trick-or-treat around the concourse before the game. And so it should be a real fun night. But, no, we had a really fun Thunder, even though we didn't play baseball that day, Bob. But
yeah,
a very successful day. Everybody had a great time. So we're moving right along, and the big club's doing well. How about the Reds? Best start they've had since 2006. And really, if you watch them play and if you look at their stats, there's a lot of guys that aren't performing yet that you figure are going to really kick it in at some point. So hopefully the best is still to come. And the Reds are right there in the hunt in a very competitive NL Central now.
We had Tim Kirkchin on the show day before yesterday, and he was singing their praises, saying not only is it a good scenario because they've got such good young talent, which, you know, who knows, guys leave and stuff down the road, but there's a really exciting group of players that, as you say, as well as they're playing now, it projects that they're only going to get better. But on top of that, it's a very winnable division. I mean, that's the other thing, the division they're in. I mean, he said they have as good a chance to win it as anybody. So that was encouraging.
Yeah, they do. Should make for a very fun summer for everybody as long as they stay healthy. And prospect-wise, this year, instead of having all the hitters that we had last year with Ellie and Matt McClain and Encarnacion Strand and Benson and all those guys here, this year we're kind of a pitcher heavy prospect look here at Louisville right now. So we've got some talented young starting pitching prospects. Lyon Richardson really pitched well yesterday for us in a 2-1 win. And so we'll see if maybe down the road, maybe one of our young pitchers will get an opportunity to pitch in the big leagues this summer. But all the young hitters in the Reds farm system right now are down at the high single A level down at Dayton. So that's where all the young hitters are. And so we'll try to make do this year with the squad we've got. But right now we're pretty competitive. We're only 3.5 out and one game under 500, so we're hanging right in there and trying to get Pat Kelly to the 2,000 win mark in his career.
Oh, that's
and
great.
That hopefully will happen sometime later this summer.
Texter has a question for you. He says, ask Greg, do you know if the strike zone ceiling and floor adjusts to different batters on the computer?
It basically does, but not to the level you'd think it would. And really, what the sensitivity this year of the strike zone that they're using for the challenge system and for the strike zone itself is highly sensitive. We've had a couple of calls where you thought that was a ball, and when they put the graphic up on the video board, Bob, I'm basically telling you, it basically hit one stitch of the red seam, and it called it a strike. I mean, it's so sensitive. And but again, it takes a lot of the chatter from the dugouts out of the game. Because it's being called basically, you know, by the computer, especially Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. So I'm a traditionalist. I didn't think I'd like all these new rules and new changes to the game, but there really has not been one that I haven't really liked. I didn't think I'd like the extra inning rule, which I've grown to become very fond of because
it's
the game's over.
Yep.
Instead of going 16, 17 innings and totally destroying your pitching staff for the next 2 or 3 days and watching shortstops, you know, throw in the 15th inning,
right.
It gets the game over quickly. So kudos to baseball. They've done it right. Hopefully it's equating to getting the, you know, another younger generation of fans involved in the game and interested in the game, because I know that's been a challenge for MLB, is trying to continue the fan base as young kids grow up to make sure that hopefully they are as passionate about baseball as you and I were when we grew up. So hopefully that's being accomplished.
Tell me a little about, here's a baseball question before I let you go, because I'm always intrigued that the minor leagues, and let's not kid ourselves, they're trying to win, and it's a lot more, hell of a lot more fun when they win than when we don't. We've learned that here. We've had both of those scenarios here. We've had winning teams here and a stretch of losing teams, and it's nice that they're back on the rail. So you want to win the games, but all ultimately, these are guys that they're being groomed to try and get to the next level. And so they sometimes use them here in ways that, you know, aren't necessarily the best way to win the game right at that moment, right, but are going to project down the road. And the reason I bring that up is because I never can figure out what they're trying to do with closers, because closing is such an important part. And yet you don't see a lot of guys strictly closers in the minor leagues. At least I don't remember seeing that. They use them, or if they are closers, they won't use them in a true closing situation. There's a whole bunch of things that go into it. Well, that's a long-winded way of getting to, I hope I'm saying his name right, Tony Santion. Am I saying that right? Double L is a Y.
Tony Santion, who was at one point a starting pitcher and a high prospect for the Reds, who right now finds himself off the 40-man roster. But, gosh, he's been impressive since he's been here. And, you know, we're keeping our fingers crossed that a guy like Tony will find his way back to the big leagues. And actually, Alan Bushnitz is our other closer that we use quite often here at the bats. But it's interesting because you compare maybe Louisville bats minor league baseball to what takes place down the road at Lou City, where that roster pretty much at the soccer team stays intact throughout the entire season. Here guys are coming and going because primarily, you know, at the USL soccer level, a lot of guys don't move around too much. They don't go to the MLS. Whereas here with AAA baseball, guys are constantly going back and forth between Major League Baseball and AAA baseball. So it's a very fluent roster for us. And you'll see games where you see a starting pitcher give up 5-6 runs maybe in the first couple innings, and you're wondering why the manager has left that starter pick, you know, stay out there in the game.
Yep.
Well, maybe the Major League club said, hey, tonight this guy's going to get in 80 to 90 pitches regardless.
Yep. And it's the same thing about closers. Sometimes, you know, like they get they're in a strict, obviously, pitch count. If they come in and they pitch in the middle of the game, you'll say, why do you only pitch an inning? Well, but because Santillan's got 4 saves already. I mean, that's in a very young season. I'm thinking, boy, closers are in great demand. Maybe he can work. I mean, I'd love to see him stay because he's helping you. But, you know,
right,
that's
now it's almost more of a roster issue for the Reds. They just got to find a way to free up a spot on the 40-man roster if they want to bring him up. So that's going to be the real hurdle they're going to have to clear if they decide to bring Tony up and add him. And I personally, I think he'd be a great addition into that bullpen in Cincinnati and get him to, you know, Diaz, get him to that closer role in the ninth inning.
If he is not on the 40-man roster, again, educate me about the business of the business, can another team, would they just have to buy his contract from the bats, or could he go to another team? Or because he's not really a Reds, he's not on their 40-man roster, so how does it
restrict? Once you run out of options, then if your options are all up and you've used up all your options going back and forth between the big leagues and the minor leagues, if you're called back up, or primarily if you're sent back down, you're going to be offered back out onto the basically the open market, and another team can pick a person up before they head back to AAA if they're out of options. So I think that's the kind of guy that, you know, the Reds don't want to lose a guy like Tony Santion in the future. They want to try to find a way to hang on to him. So it's a tight situation trying to manage that and make sure when they do call him up that it's at the proper time, and whoever they decide to then take off the 40-man roster and maybe send back down doesn't get exposed and maybe picked up so they don't lose another player. So it makes Nick Kroll's job as the general manager of the Reds a tall task sometimes, trying to manage all this roster movement.
Yeah, it's could be worse. Could be trying to navigate through NIL and transfer portals. That's
oh God, Bob, I don't know. What's your thought? How would you have managed back in your day when you were coaching, dealing with this?
As bizarre as it sounds, I would like the transfer portal if they just could give it a little bit more structure. Like, you know, like that situation that Louisville's gone through with two guys now, I guess one in football and one in basketball, who came, took a whole bunch of NIL money and never
and
played
bounced,
here,
yeah.
and then bounced. That seems, I mean, they got to be treated a little bit more like employees. I mean, you can't just do that, I don't think. But I don't have a problem. I like the fact that I know, like we were just talking before you came on, a couple of guys that are they have either gotten a commitment from or they're involved with. I had their games this year, and I know what they can do at the Power Five level. You know, recruits, even the guys who follow it, you don't really know. You're betting on the come there. I mean, you're guessing to some degree, and some guys have a more educated guess than others. But these guys, I'm liking the kind of roster he's putting together. I could see the kind of players he's looking for. He wants willing passers, kids. I mean, it sounds cliched, but it's true. He wants kids that are willing passers, that are going to make a commitment to play defensively. They make an effort at both ends of the floor. They've got shooters, thank God, because God knows we went through stretches where they didn't. And I don't think he's overly concerned with just playing a big lineup. I don't think, and you know, I like that. I don't have a problem with if you get the right combination of guys. Size is the single most, Lou Campanella used to say, it's the single most overrated aspect of basketball, just pure size. You need players.
Well, you know, in today's game, spacing is so big in today's game.
God, absolutely. Yep. And so, these guys all look like they can space the floor, so it looks like they'll be some fun.
Whereas in the past couple of years, it looked like Waterston Expressway at rush hour sometimes. Guys are getting in each other's way. It's like, guys, have you not practiced all week? I mean, what's going on here?
The Waterston Expressway at rush hour. That's the offense at a clinic. Hi, we got a guy speaking today on the Waterston offense. Want to get in here and talk about that? Yeah, the key to it is to have as many guys in as small an area as possible. That's what we're looking for. Yeah, there we go. So, yeah, I think we'll be away from
I'll let you take that term. You can have it. I'll give it to you.
Oh, yeah, I'll give credit where it's due. As Greg Galliette says, the Waterston Expressway offense at rush hour. Oh, my. That's very good indeed. Hey, listen, do you know how to do this, Tulio? Can you put him on hold? I need to talk with Greg for literally 2 minutes off air. So I'm going to do that. So that's a bad sign for Greg, so it means I'm going to ask for something. So we'll do that on the other side. So you put him on hold. Greg will stay for a minute. You guys will listen to these fabulous commercials, which means we can pay our bills. And then we'll come back with more radio on ESPN 680 1057.
On ESPN 680 and 105.7. Well,
not suitable for air, but if comedy came our way, a song.
All right, but I'm glad you both are here.
Okay.
Because, oh, crap, I think I just erased it. I'll find it, though. It's not hard to find. I want you to weigh in on this. And we'll come back to the portal stuff, by the way. Actually, we should probably... I don't know why everybody mixed betting on the come. That's an expression. It comes from playing craps.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Right. You think gambling, you're going to win on the first roll. You're betting on the come out roll. So people seem to think it's got something to do with the sexual term. You're just joining us. Treor evidently did commit. That's what we're hearing. The young man from Long Beach.
Abubakar Treor.
Yeah.
Right.
So that gives them another important player.
6'5".
What a cool name, too.
Forward.
Abubakar. Can we call him Boo Boo? I want to call him Boo Boo.
Yeah, maybe.
I like that. That would be that's another guy that fits the bill, just what we talked about. So, but my understanding was, I think he was put in a tough place. I am getting everything fourth and fifth hand. So believe me when I tell you this, that I'm not trying to get into weeds. I'm not trying to stir up anything. I just think that this little anecdote, which I'm about to share, at 1 o'clock, by the way, we don't have a guest, right?
No.
Good, because then I want to get you.
Mark's story is at 1:30.
I want you and Tulio to weigh in on this thing. So
okay.
That'll be good. But here, this little anecdotal information is consistent with what I think I said earlier, which was, I think that when Pat Kelsey came in, and if you remember, Jeff Goodman's very close with him, and he kind of told us, what would you do? I'd clean house. Well, I don't think he was just saying that of his own opinion. I think he had talked with Kelsey and kind of got wind of the fact that I don't think Pat really was all that keen on keeping anybody here.
Right.
And I do think that there's at least a couple of guys that probably would have been interested in coming back. And I think Mike James is the one that maybe they would have... because he's such a great kid. He really is. Everybody agrees with that. But then all of a sudden NC State came in, and, you know, he and Huntley Hatfield, I guess, are close, and so they could go together. And so that, then that just went. But my point is just that I'm not even sure. I think even him, as great as his character is, I think that Pat really felt the punch bowl was poisoned. You know, there was you can't save it. The culture was so contaminated, there's the word I'm looking for, over the last couple of years, that he just wanted to clean house. And that's one of the reasons. He's maniacal anyway, and I say that as a compliment, but he's doubly maniacal because he literally kind of committed to himself, I'm wiping, give me the dry erase board, and I'm wiping it clean. And so I got to go start from scratch. And
right.
So I, you know, other guys are there, hey, we got to get five guys, six guys, whatever. This guy's got to bring 10 guys, 12 guys. So, you know, I think that that's the urgency. And why I say that's relevant to what I said is because I think that while he didn't come out and say it, I think that he certainly he would have. Would he probably have wanted to take Ballo? You know, yeah, probably would have.
Right.
I mean, but my point
the
is,
big man.
Yeah,
the
I don't think
man.
I don't think he was in there saying, "Let me go see if I can just go get, you know, a eyeball popping." Transfers that people will go, wow, they got. I mean, because he's got them from everywhere. First of all, he brought two from Charleston. He's got, you know, guys from the Pac-12. He's got a BYU player. He's got. I mean, he's. The point is, when you have made that commitment, you in your mind have said, "This is the team I envision. This is what I'm looking for." And I don't give a rat's ass what level they're from. If they can do it for me, that's who I'm going to go get. So now he goes to Long Beach State, which is obviously not a Power 6 team, but this is an experienced player, and I think his skill set, he's a willing passer, he's a willing defender, he can score some, he rebounds. This is a team that's going to be able to spread the floor. They got shooters. I don't think they're going to overwhelm you with their size based on what I'm seeing, but I think they're going to try and overwhelm you with their positional effectiveness, if that's a term I could make up, meaning that, you know, at every position on the floor, they're going to have guys and depth when he's by the time he's done with guys who can shoot it, who can are willing to pass it, are willing to defend. They'll probably have to rebound by a committee, I'm going to guess. I don't know that he's going to just trot a guy out there who's going to get 15 rebounds again. Maybe they will. I don't know. By the time this is all done, I don't know. But I like the fact that, I mean, the kid from Washington that I'd forgotten how well he played the game. I'm sorry, but I'd forgotten it. The games all run together. And I got my notebook out last night. I goes, oh, my God, this kid was terrific. He had 17 points against Arizona and four threes. You know, and the guy from his school, you know, Rain, who's going to shoot the lights out. And he's got a bunch of guys listed as their positions as quote-unquote combo guards. I love me combo guards.
Just like you love your windows?
I do. I love my windows. If I could look at a combo guard through a window.
I'm just sitting there with a nice cup of Joe.
Very happy. This is like, a happy day. Because, I mean, those are the guys that, again, we're all products of what we saw. And the teams that I love the best, you know, didn't. Some of them had guys that were quote-unquote true. Most of them, I identified one as the lead guard. But by and large, he was a guy who could shoot, too. And the other guard, the guy that was the quote-unquote off guard, was a guy who could create shots for his teammates as well, was a willing passer, and by and large they both were capable defenders and complemented each other defensively. You know, that's kind of, if you look a little bit, Peyton and Russ, I mean, that's kind of what they did. Peyton was much more of a solid on the ball dog defender,
right?
And Russ was running like a wild man, which allowed him to do that because he had Peyton
there.
Was a solid positional on the ball defender, and Russ could go
to combine for more steals and like
exactly. So I like teams that do that. So I'm digging the kinds of players he's bringing in. So and again, I only brought up that story about him because I think there were a couple of guys, and I don't want to mention specific names because unless I'm sure, I don't want to do that. But I think that basically asked him, I want to come back, and I think he's basically said no. I'm sorry, we're cleaning house, and you know, and it's a fresh start for everybody, including the players. So they've all, most of them have found homes. Tyler hasn't, Caleb hasn't, Manny hasn't,
right?
But almost everybody else has, including some I didn't see coming. I didn't see JJ going to DePaul, but good for him. It's not too far away, and they're building.
Are Hersey and Aiden McCool still?
Hersey, no disrespect to either of them, but I mean, I know, they, you know, Hersey played a little this year, just
right.
I loved how, but Aiden is a practice player, and there's no knock on that.
You but I mean, are they better. Still on the?
I don't.
I think McCool's not on the roster, but
Hersey still is, right?
Technically still is, yeah.
So. Yeah, so there's that. So we'll see. It's I know people say, how do you not like recruiting and love the transfer portal? Well, that's why, because I've seen these guys. I know who you're getting. In high school, you can't always go by that. I mean, you some guys look dazzling in high school, and they're not fits for the – you want to see what a guy can do at the Power 6 level. And you can say, well, not all these guys are Power 6 players. But okay, but they came from winning programs, all of them. I mean, Long Beach State, for all the chaos that went on there with the knucklehead athletic director, they still were able to get to the NCAA tournament and win games.
The AD knew what he was doing.
Oh,
no, yeah, remember
what he said, right?
Yeah, no, of
this
course.
Is my, I know what I'm doing.
Oh, yeah, no, there's no question about that.
That was all him.
Yeah, so I mean, he's got winners, willing passers, hard-nosed guys that are going to try defensively. Now he's got shooters. He can spread the floor. They all rebound for their size pretty well. So that's the kind of players that you're looking for. You're not looking for a George Mikan, a guy who plays on the block, and that's where he's going to be. That's an old school reference for you.
I liked it.
Yeah, George Mikan, the first dominant big man. He was the first big man star in the NBA.
When was this?
1950s. Led the then Minneapolis Lakers. Played at DePaul. Was a very good player at DePaul. And then went to the Minneapolis Lakers and led them to a number of championships because he was the dominant player. And then in fabulous... I can't remember which city it was. He became the first commissioner of the ABA. If you've not read this book, Loose Balls by Terry Pluto... Mm-hmm. The colorful history of the ABA, you are missing one of the most entertaining reads in history. It is, and if you loved the ABA like I did, it's a love story to the league. It celebrates its unbelievable goofiness. I mean, they were just trying to survive, and so they were always making crap up. They would have like spontaneous drafts. I'm not kidding you. They loved to have
Let's
drafts.
Shake it up.
They were always having drafts. These guys were fans as much as fans were, and you know, fans are always doing that. Here's a hypothetical trade. What if we said? So that's what they were doing. They had all these drafts, so they would draft. And keep in mind, they had no way knowing if they could get these guys because the NBA was chasing them also.
Right.
So they had all these drafts, and I think if I'm not mistaken, I forget which city he was in. Oh, man. George Mikan's opening speech as the commissioner. This is the first day of the ABA. They're trying to make an impression.
Right.
And he, again, these are not the cities, but it's like this. He's like, you know, he's at the microphone, the arena. They got a good crowd, just opening first game ever. And so he stands there and he says, I just want to say what a thrill it is to be here in Philadelphia. And they were like in Pittsburgh.
Swing and a miss. Off to a great start.
But that league was, oh my God, I'm telling you. I am thoroughly convinced if you're old enough, and if you're not, I'm sorry for you. You can't find many videos of them. There are a few. You can still find a few of the Colonels and the Pacers and the Nets, who are the three marquee teams in that league. If you love basketball, you'd have a hard time not loving the old ABA. What's that got to do with George Mikan? And I guess that was the point. Mikan became the star. That's how you won championships. And so the league in the NBA became known as the big man's league. You had Bill Russell, who won championships with the Celtics. And then Wilt Chamberlain came along. And then our own Wes Unseld. And then Baltimore Bullets became the regular season champions when he came in there. Was the rookie of the year and the MVP. And the Knicks had Willis Reed. And Nate Thurman was a terrific center in the league. The ABA couldn't get those guys. There were obviously a lot fewer 6'11 guys than there are 6'5 and 6'6 guys. So it became the league of the wings and the small forwards. And that's a way more entertaining and exciting position than centers playing block to block and around the basket. As Will Chamberlain, as dominant as he was, shooting finger rolls, you had Julius Erving flying from the wing and dunking
it.
Yeah. Oh, my God. And the great thing was, as this book points out, because there wasn't the TV exposure there is now, a lot of it was like through word of mouth. So you didn't, they were like legends. You never really got to see them. You never really got to see Julius. You got to hear this guy who's playing in Virginia. What's his name? Julius Erving. They call him the doctor. He's unbelievable. Well, what's he do? He just flies. He was Michael Jordan before Michael Jordan. I mean, I'll never forget they put the ABA All-Star game on, which was exciting. He was playing with the Virginia Squires at that time, as they were called. And nobody had seen this guy. Even though he's from Long Island, I didn't see him in high school. I was only 8 or 9 or whatever the hell I was. And so this game comes on TV, and I'll never forget. They obviously knew they had to put on a show. And it was like that stretch with Phi Slamma Jamma against Louisville in the 83 game.
Right.
Where they went up and down.
Dunk
one end, right there, dunk the other end, come back the other end, dunk at the other end, come back this end, dunk at this end. And I remember one dunk Julius made, he was up there so long, he kind of went to dunk it and he hit it on the front rim. And then he had enough time to pull it back and then dunk it again.
Oh, jeez.
It was things I've never seen before. So, and that red, white, and blue ball, which was great for shooters, Louis Dampier. I was so thrilled when I got to meet Louis Dampier, because when I watched him, as much as he was breaking my heart because he was making against my beloved New York Nets, as they were known then, watching that ball with that beautiful red, white, and blue.
Oh, yeah.
And when you're pure shooter like he was, the rotation on the ball.
Oh, it's perfect.
Oh, you just fell in love with the game. So my point is, maybe where I'm influenced by that. I like teams that still, because the modern game today is much more like the ABA game than the traditional NBA game was. They don't play a lot of, as much as big players and guys that are strong, big, strong players, you know, the inside guys. Why am I forgetting the damn guys from Denver's name?
Jokic.
I was going to say Doncic, and although he fits that bill also, to be honest
right.
with you, but more so Jokic. I mean, this is the teams that are. The game is still played now, spreading the floor, and you get guys like the Knicks are great because of Brunson and largely their backcourt people. And then when the Warriors, the Splash Brothers, the game is more fun that way. Sorry, and I think it's think it's harder to defend. So that seems to be the kind of team he's putting together, and so we'll see. I always believed if you were out of moves. Like, you know, you put together, like most coaches do, a game plan. We'll do this, and then maybe if we struggle here, we'll do that, and then maybe we'll play this. If you just were kind of, you'd sit and look at your assistants and go, like, I'm not sure, how to keep that phone from falling down during my show all the time. I don't know what to do. My thought was, get smaller. Just get smaller. Whatever it is, get smaller, get smaller, get smaller, get smaller. I don't know why, but it worked. You know, and I saw it, and again, we're byproducts of our history. Again, this is, now we're doing history for you. The 1970 NBA championship, the Knicks had never won a championship. I'm 12 years old, so I'm living and dying by every possession. And they are playing in the Garden, and Willis Reed gets hurt. It's game 5, NBA Finals against the Lakers, 2-2. And the Lakers are beating them badly, 25-15. Isn't it amazing? I still remember crap like that. Reed goes down, tears the muscle in his leg. He's out for the rest of the game, and now Chamberlain starts going wild, and then Knicks backup center with marginal Nate Bowman. He was okay. I mean, he was NBA backup center, and they don't know what the hell to do. So what did they do? Get smaller. They had Dave DeBuscher, who was 6'6 at one time, guarding Chamberlain. I heard
what DeBuscher's, the?
Well, that's what Chamberlain, he said after the game. It's the most ridiculous thing to look at from the bench. I mean, my top of my head was like at his shoulder, but you know, he was strong, and he said I'd push him. But more importantly, what they started to do is they all started to fly around from every direction, and they would come from the blind side, and they had guards who could do that. Walt Frazier and Dick Barnett and Bill Bradley, very smart player, and Dave Stallworth, who played at Wichita State, and they're coming from everywhere. They're coming from everywhere, stealing it from the blind side. They're double teaming it, trapping. They're running all over the place, and then they're getting runouts, and the place is going wild. And now Chamberlain's got to guard a guy, so he had Dave Stallworth, who was even smaller than DeBuscher. So they couldn't guard him one-on-one, so they kind of played a zone, which you weren't allowed to do in the NBA at that time, a modified zone. But on offense, Chamberlain's trying to guard Stallworth. Stallworth's just backing him out to like, and this is before the three-point line, backing him out to like 25 feet away and then flying by him and shooting these swooping layups, these reverse twisting layups, which are exciting to begin with. And
right.
And they absolutely befuddled them. They came back and won that game. And then they lost game six in L.A. because Reed didn't even dress. I don't think he went out. I think he stayed in New York. Maybe flew with him. That's irrelevant. But Chamberlain now had 45 points, had like 20 dunks. And the, you know, they weren't tricking him that time. And then game seven is the one that Legends
made. Legend, yeah.
Reed comes out and the place goes wild. He makes two shots even though he can hardly move. And they win the championship. And Frazier to this day, a little tiny bit bitter.
Yeah, just because what? He Everybody had like 30 points.
And 36 points and 19 assists.
And he wasn't
and
the
they
MVP.
Talk about
he
really,
wasn't the MVP. They gave it to Willis Reed. Well,
there you go. So, is that true?
Yes. I'm almost positive. Wow. Because, like, it's...
Well, I know everybody talks about that as the Willis Reed game, and
yeah,
and
he's like, just like, hey.
Hello, I was responsible.
Almost dropped 40.
I was. I realize I was responsible for, 36 and 38, 74 points of the 113 we scored. But whatever. So that's a much more exciting way to play. And so that's what the place could use. Place will be... rather than the Waterson Expressway rush hour offense. Oh, Greg, very funny. Galliette, very funny indeed. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. I got a question to ask my two compatriots here. You're going to like it. On ESPN 680-1057.
Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience, too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.